Hi, this is Tessa from Don't Forget the Bubbles. This talk was recorded live at DFTB 18. Enjoy the show.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. I run a small community garden in my backyard. And as I was sitting in the garden one day, I saw a bee engrossed in a flower. And I followed it as it went from one flower to another. And that evening, I watched a documentary that said scientists have followed a bee and they've discovered that a bee's lifetime is only 50 days. And during those 50 days, it only produces 1 teaspoon. One twelfth of a teaspoon of honey. And in that teaspoon of honey, we realize that there is an element of healing. But what a bee does as well is it helps us pollinate our crops. So just like that bee, I feel that we can visit each other with our billions of ancestry nectar and tell our stories so that we can pollinate an incredible community that is resilient and adaptable, and one that actually our time needs now. So I come from an oral culture. And in our oral ancestry, African culture, it is said that cultures who don't tell stories die out. And so storytelling was one of the most important African traditions. Just like our apps today, I believe the gift of story is an app with which we can learn about another culture. We can learn and understand about another culture. And listening to their stories and their songs gives us a great insight into their homes. And I'm sure that the gifts and gems of our past is interwoven in this tool of language and rhythm. So I feel an immense love for being here today and for the people who have organized this conference, giving us this platform to share our stories and make our experiences relevant. And as much as I love and appreciate this platform, the greatest reward that I have ever been given is coming to this country with my family and starting over. The opportunity of calling myself a Somali Australian and having an opportunity for discovery and understanding that I have an incredible potential within me. So that has given that simple opportunity has given me the ability to unlock that potential and my passion and purpose for life, which is sharing stories and connecting you with my ancestry. In 1991, we were uprooted from our Somali homeland by a civil war, a war that forced us out of our homes and being with our loved ones. I escaped this war in a boat with my 2 young boys, not so young now, and I was pregnant with my 5th child. the girl on the end. My husband, Mohammed, was not with us at the time. He was stranded in Dubai in anticipation of the Gulf War. And in this war, I was 23 years old. I've never been in a boat before. And I did not have the necessary skills to be on this journey. It was so much tougher than I anticipated. Our boat, not that it would really pass on as a boat in Australian standards, was built to transport goods and not people. It had seen better days. The wood was rotten, the metal horribly rusted, and at first the engine wouldn't start, so we picked with a makeshift mast and sail. And since the engine was at fault, it was decided that it would be rested at night and we would make our journey only during the day. This prolonged our journey to 3 days and 3 nights with very little food and water and no medical supplies on board. I realized that in the boat, it was crowded, and there weren't enough strong men on board. And in hindsight, I realized the war was fought by men on opposite sides. The women and children were the casualties, and elders, the casualties of this war. There were many women on board. Most of them had 6 to 7 children, and they did not come with their husbands. There were also other women on board who had just become widows, and you could see the pain and desperation on their faces. And the mayhem on the boat, the mayhem and chaos during the day on that boat was very visible. Children were crying with no food, no water. You could hear the groans of elders with pain and thirst. You could also see the sick, nothing to ease their pain. There was no medicine. The women, always as nurturers, were on their feet, trying to support and help, even though they were as exhausted as everyone else. But during the night, the whole scenery changed for me. It was calm and silent. I could see the beautiful moon and the stars in an endless array of shining light in a sky that was so brightly close that almost touched the deep darkness in the boat. And in that space, I could also hear the waves crashing on the sides of the boat, just like a lullaby, reminding us that there might be a better tomorrow. And in that hope and promise, I really felt not so contracted like the day when there was all this mayhem. I felt truly expanded. And that promise did come true for us because we landed on the shores of Kenya. 2 weeks after we came to Kenya, other boats came after us, and they were not as lucky as we were because they sank on the outskirts of a small town called Malindi, and hundreds of lives were lost. In November of 1998, my family and I came to Australia. And this time, I came with my husband, Mohammed, was with me. I made sure of that. And four children, and I was also pregnant with my fifth child. And although we were very lucky refugees, and we came through the family reunion visa, we had been processed offshore, which meant that we would straight away, we were resettled. And we were very lucky because we were resettled in one of the most affluent and beautiful Bayside areas in Brighton, here in Melbourne. And although our journey and struggles were hard in fitting in to a new community that we did not know much about, we still felt how lucky we were. But during this journey, I went through phases. My first phase was one of victimhood, utter powerlessness, of not being part of a community because I had left all my extended family back home. I did not have my friends and the community that I grew up in. And so that was also topped by having had my last child here. I went through a postnatal depression. And I might have stayed there longer if certain demands weren't made upon me, because I had children to take to school and transition them to the new community, because my husband, Mohammed, did not have a word of English, and he had to start school. And so from this transition, I started interacting with the community, but I remember very vividly the way I went into my next phase, which was far ahead of myself, which was one of anger. And that anger was made by when my four-year-old daughter asked me, "Mom, did they not want me because I'm black?" After our visit to the local, a frosty reception at the local kinder. And I remember her words to this day, because I remember the excitement with which she was ready to break into her new world. She wanted to be part of the larger community, and everyone else at home was going to school. And that little girl did not have that. And she also, you know, I also remember how she wanted to prepare for her kinder. And she made me buy a Barbie rucksack so that she could be like everyone else at the kinder. And having seen that, I realized that my family and I were really stooped in fear. Because before she uttered those words, the September 11 had happened, and we had taken our four children out of the local schools into an Islamic school. We could not afford the fees for private school, but yet we did, and we were communing from home to that school about half an hour every day, and half an hour going in and going back. And so we realized that that was not an option. And that anger, I love the phase of anger because it gave me the power to make choices, the clarity to make amazing choices. My husband and I then said, well, we're not in Somalia anymore, and we are going to be part of this community. So we really, that anger grounded us and made a decision that changed the trajectory of our family. My third phase was an incredible phase of empowerment. It was a phase where I had to ask myself, what kind of life did I want from this life? I have been given a second chance, and how am I going to use every minute and every second of it? And I decided that in order to be in this phase, I had to understand in depth what I was really looking for. And having had these phases, I think I was given the power to really understand how to overcome my fears. And every religion or every spiritual guidance that we know, it says love is the antidote for fear. But what was really, what is love? Because love can be just a concept. And when I dug deep, what I realized love to be, and the tool that I really want to share with you today to take away, is that love for me has been, it's come out as an acronym. And the first letter was to listen deeply and to observe with no judgment and to validate. So what are we listening to, observing and validating? And I realize that emotion, experience, and ego is what drives us human beings. And the minute we can listen to our emotions and we can listen and look, observe, and validate our experiences and our egos, then we become the decision makers of our lives. And having observed that bee in the flower, I realized that what it was doing, because it did not understand it has 50 days to live, and neither do we know how much time we have to live. So what it does, wakes up every morning and it gets out of its hive to go and visit the most beautiful flowers that it can. And it works from a place of absolute joy and privilege. And while it's doing that, it creates honey and pollinates crops. And so when we work from a place of privilege and joy, I think we will tap into our inherent human potential. And while doing it, we can allow others to come on the journey with us, because inspiration is the key. I hear a lot of people saying we need to empower women. And that makes me laugh, because women have all the power. And I think we use that phrase to distract women from their own power. And my work that I do now is one that comes from that place of joy and privilege, to remind women that we are the source of creation, that we are empowered enough to step up and not be sideliners anymore, because the world cannot afford it. We have to stand up and do the work, but not from a place of being tired, but a place of upliftment and joy. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Marilyn. Thank you. Wow. There's so much work that love has to do in the world, and I was just so moved by your words, Mariam. I'm going to ask Grace to let us know what's happening on Twitter, and then I've got a little question that I want to ask.
So, all right. Mariam.
Did I finish my time? I forgot to show a small video.
Can we show the small video?
Yes. I always do that, and my daughter gets angry with me. Can we go back to... How do I go back to the slides?
Maybe they'll do it for us.
Okay. Thank you.
I think it's under control. While they're putting, yes, here it comes.
Okay.
It will come on.
Yeah. Yep. No? It's the last side. Wasn't meant to be, I think.
We're going to believe that it's going to happen.
Okay.
For just one more minute. And then I've got a question I want to ask you while the slide's coming. So,
please.
So come with me, we'll come into the middle. So you're a woman who's so full of joy and so full of love. I can see that. But in order for us to be like that bee that you talked about, I've got this feeling that we have to kind of start our day in a particular way. And I'm always really interested in how people start their day. Do you have a particular kind of ritual that you do each day when you get up?
Yes. In our Islamic culture, we pray. So I do my prayers, but I also meditate. And I think to start our day with intention is one of the greatest things to do. And that's what I actually wanted to share with you. It is a small video of my garden and how that garden was created from a place of intent. Mm. Every tree, we have about 40 fruit trees, and every tree was planted by a community member from a place of intention. So we have a tree of love, of trust, of connections, and so many others.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
beautiful. So let's find out what's happening on Twitter.
Yeah.
Grace.
So, lots of people really love the words that you had to share with us, Miriam. Thank you so much for reminding us that the purpose of life and sharing stories and connecting with each other. Some great sort of quotes from your talk have been shared. Liz Crowe sort of shared when you were talking about that we should know what incredible potential we all carry with us, that our stories to tell the past and present. And also sort of, I guess, the experience that you shared with your daughter resonated with a lot of people. So talking about how challenging it was coming into a new place, a new country, also making us reflect on how we as a community can be more welcoming to refugees and more supportive. I really also loved the acronym that you shared, to listen deeply, to observe with no judgment, to validate, to think about emotion, experience, and ego, so that we can become the musician makers of our lives. Some people also shared about how you were talking about the bees and how they're so representative of what we do, that they come and they go and they create honey with the work that they do, but it doesn't come out of a place of tiredness, but of a place of joy, and just reminding us how privileged we are to all be here today, to be able to do the work we do, and that it does make a difference. So thank you very much, Miriam.